We want to welcome you back to the United We Pledge podcast. I'm your host, Colleen Rue, and we are excited to have another amazing guest with us today. I'm going to have her help introduce herself to you, but this is Jerrell Maglio, and she is with the Dolores Turco Foundation, and they have been doing some amazing work, not even just in the United States, but worldwide, and they have a passion for supporting children and families, and we are just going to tell their story today. So, Jerrell, welcome to the United We Pledge podcast. And what can you tell me about yourself? Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, firstly, thank you so much, Colleen, for inviting me. Again, I feel very honored because I've heard so many wonderful guests that you've had. As for myself, again, it's from the Dolores Turco Foundation, and that was my mom. And when she passed away about 20-some years ago, she left a charitable trust that she wanted to be used to protect children from abuse, neglect, and exploitation. My background is far from that. My background actually is healthcare administration. So when she kind of asked me to get involved, it was something I've always loved. I've always loved children. I love children and the elderly. I feel that, you know, there's a lot of defenseless, they need a voice. And I always felt, particularly in my background being with the elderly, many of them were voiceless because of their incapacity, mental or physical incapacity. But children also, they don't have all kinds of the ability to speak for themselves sometimes, and even legally they don't have the rights that adults have. So they do need to be protected. So after a while, we were out of the healthcare business, and I began to focus my attention on the foundation, the Dolores Turco Foundation.
Yeah, that's incredible. What made your mom so passionate about children?
Well, my mother adored her grandchildren. That's the first time I saw her, really. I mean, she was not like that with us. My grandmother really was, she went to work and my grandmother spent a lot of time with us doing the homework and all. But my mom was always around. Her family was primary, no matter what she was involved in. Evenings, weekends, it was always her family, her children. But when the grandchildren came along, I mean, she became a completely different person. She had all those 8 children picked up every day to come to her house. They spent the whole day at her house. She had a little preschool going on. And then they would all be dropped off back home because we were working during the day, almost like she had done. And then on weekends, she wanted them over for Sunday dinner and all the holidays where she made them very special. We had Santa Clauses and big parties, and she would have even not only her grandchildren, but invite all her siblings' grandchildren. And then everyone would get presents, and the Easter Bunny for Easter would come, and they do face painting. I didn't realize how much she loved kids until I saw her with her grandchildren. The passion started there.
That is such an incredible story. And I think it happens so often when we're parents that we don't realize the influence and effect we can have on our children until we get our grandchildren, and maybe some of our other, you know, things in life had slowed down a little bit. What a great pleasure for your children to be able to have a grandmother like that.
Oh, yes. And this is, I think she's gone now about 20, 25 years, and they still remember. They still remember Christmas and Easter and times at her house, and we took them into New York to shows, and they, you know, she's unforgettable.
Oh, that's great. And what a legacy that she's left here and that you're carrying on. I'd love to hear about maybe some of the things that you've been doing. You're back there in New Jersey, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So in New Jersey, you know, you've got some programs that you've been working on in that community. Kind of explain those programs to me and what the need was for those programs.
Sure. I actually started out, the mission of the Dolores Turco Foundation is to protect children from abuse, neglect, and exploitation, as I mentioned before. And I started out with, my interest was in just donating to various different organizations. And then abortion, I felt, was the ultimate in child abuse. So I was very involved in protecting the unborn, but in addition, their moms. So we opened, one of our first projects was to open a center for moms in crisis pregnancy, because we felt if the moms were safe, protected, and were well taken care of, those kids were in good hands, because that's what they really, moms would not make that decision unless they had serious problems. So when what we did was help these women to, we provided all for all of their needs, whether it's medical and place to stay. We had a home for women in crisis pregnancy, and then we would help them finish school. We'd help them get jobs, and we taught them how to care for their children. And most of them, the vast majority, I don't know if we had any that chose adoption at that time, because we taught them how to be, good parenting skills. So then that was really a convent that we had the good fortune of being able to rent from a group of a religious organization. But then that convent was eventually, they asked for it back because it needed to be used for other services. So I continued, and I would just, support women in crisis pregnancy, would get involved in, and I actually started going to abortion clinics and as a pregnancy counselor to offer them, let them know that there's choices. But then I realized that one of the reasons that, women and girls, because a lot of these kids were younger, made this choice is because of, getting involved sexually active at a young age. And I realized that if we can teach young people to refrain from and avoid risks of sexual activity, we can eliminate some of the needs for abortion. So that's when we really got started getting into the schools. And we started out in a Catholic school, the Archdiocese of Newark, and we went to the Archbishop at the time, and we told him that we'd be interested. He was actually looking for support for some of their programs, and I said, "You know what? We would be interested from the Dolores Turco Foundation. We'd be interested in educating children in middle and high school about the sanctity of life and also marriage." Promoting marriage and the dignity of life. So he allowed us, and we funded it, but he allowed us to go to all the Catholic schools in the Archdiocese of Newark with this message. And the message at that time, LifeNet was the organization that got into the schools, and they were the ones that promoted the dignity of life and sanctity of marriage to about 18,000 students in Catholic schools. And we believe that parents should be very involved in education. So we had about 600 parent presentations, and it was a very successful program.
Wow. And what I love, Gerald, as you're talking about this, is you saw the need, and we're talking about something that can be divisive, when we're talking about, the sanctity of life and the unborn children. It has been a divisive topic in our country. But what I love that you did was you saw that we can go, take a step back, and we can go to maybe the root of where these decisions even come from, where if we handle those things prior to getting in the situation where we need to decide on an abortion or adoption or other things that are out there. I love that you took that opportunity to say, hey, where's our root issue? Let's go there. Let's do some education. Let's allow the parents to be involved in this. And what a difference that makes going forward.
Yeah, it did make a difference, and the schools were very, I mean, they're continuing that program today, even though the funding only lasted about, the grant was for a certain number of years, and it started in 2009, ended on or around 2014 to 15, and that program is still going on in the Archdiocese of Newark. as we speak. So it is something that they found of value, and I'm so delighted that they decided to continue.
It's just a great way to kind of manage some of these really, really difficult situations where with that pre-education and teaching those values early and having that education and getting parents involved. And I love how you saw that need and you were able to go and fill that need. So what are you doing today? Like, bring us up to speed today.
Yeah. So what happened was we began to realize that a lot of the issues in public schools, they were teaching a sex education course, which was called Comprehensive Sex Education. But unfortunately, instead of teaching what we were promoting, which was refraining or avoiding sexual activity as the 100% foolproof way of avoiding pregnancy, but not just pregnancy, sexually transmitted diseases, which is a much greater problem in our culture. In fact, it's a public health crisis, the STDs, and it's a $16 billion cost in our nation. But the worst part is that 50% of all new sexually transmitted diseases are coming from the ages of 15 to 24, I think 15, 23, 24 year olds. So that, and 15 year olds, this is high school, and these are the kids we're trying to reach. So it's not just pregnancy anymore, avoidance, but the avoidance of risky behaviors, because we've, in our research, because along the way, I tried to get myself more and more educated on sex education in schools. And we were finding in our research that, that kids that are involved sexually are more apt to also be involved in other risky behaviors, including starting with tobacco, but alcohol, illicit drugs. They're more apt to commit suicide and be depressed. So that we realized that, and of course, more apt to have sexually transmitted diseases. So we realized that there's more of a problem going on here in the Catholic schools. We were really, we had kind of a religious perspective, and we were able to teach faith and why we had these values through our Christian faith. But in the public schools, you're not allowed to talk about that.
Right.
But they're still realizing serious problems. So what we did at that point was I started writing a grant, and the grant was for abstinence-based, and they call them sexual risk avoidance programs. Now, while we scored really well on our grant, project in New Jersey was funded. So unfortunately, we did not get funded. But another thing occurred, a very unfortunate event, but it led to something positive. My friend of 35 years, best friend in the world, was in a tragic auto accident and suddenly died. And it really had an impact. I never expected that. And she had, she worked in an organization where they had a life insurance policy, and out of nowhere, where I get called that, you know, I'm a beneficiary of this life insurance policy.
Oh, wow.
Nothing huge, but it was, it was shocking. I never expected that. And I used those funds because we didn't get the grant. I said, this is something that I wanted her legacy to be remembered. So I did something I knew she would want me to do. She was an MSW. She worked with in addiction and alcoholism and broken families. And she worked in this field. And I decided that, well, I'll use this money to start a program, what I wrote the grant for, as a pilot, to just pick one school. We were going to do a few schools. We're going to reach about, I think the grant was for maybe 5,000 students we tried to reach. But we picked one, and we picked one of the worst in terms of poverty in the state of New Jersey, that had the highest. We picked Newark, New Jersey, and Barringer had one of the lowest graduation rates in the state. Our state has an average of 90% graduation, and this school has 60.
Wow.
I think 62, maybe 62% graduation, and has one of the highest poverty. Newark, it's located in Newark, which is probably the or one of the highest poverty children living in poverty in our state of New Jersey, and it also has the highest rate of STDs and one of the highest pregnancies. So we tried to pick a school that could benefit from a program where we would teach healthy relationships. Again, we couldn't be talking about, our Christian faith, but we were going to be teaching Christian values and healthy relationships and sexual risk avoidance. And the whole purpose was poverty prevention. And I don't know if you've heard of the success sequence, but the success sequence and research has demonstrated that if kids can graduate from high school, get a job, full-time job, and get married before they have children, there's only a 2% chance they'll end up in poverty. So our goal was to teach the success sequence, and the first step was graduate from high school. So the purpose of our program was to help kids. One of the reasons kids drop out is because they'll get pregnant and they'll be involved in risky behaviors and drop out of school. So our goal was to address these risky behaviors through a healthy relationships curriculum and with the purpose of helping them to graduate, so as the first step of the success sequence. And that's how we actually got involved. And people say, how did you get into a public school? Because these program, public school is not that open to the kind of subject matter that we were teaching. You're talking about sex risk avoidance, and abstinence is almost a unpleasant word, not a politically correct word in the public schools. But how we did get in is we committed, in addition to teaching healthy relationships, that we committed to help these kids graduate. So we added tutoring to our program and support services to help the kids in all subjects for tutoring and to help them fill out college applications and help them write grants and with student aid, help them complete student aid applications so that they could graduate and go on to college. And that's why they let us in, because the school being at 60% graduation rate,
Well, and
they were willing
you
to
guys
try us out.
you were go again going back to the root of what was causing maybe the issues later down the road, and really getting to the root of those things and doing something that could cause that change. And the success, what was the success like that you saw through the program?
Well, we were able to educate 625 students in the area of healthy relationships. And then in addition, we provided services to 158 students to help them fill out applications, to help them get funding or aid. We call it financial aid, student financial aid, to help them with their studies. And a lot of them were Spanish, so we hired Spanish-speaking tutors to help them with the language. And so 158 students participated in the graduation, the programs that would help them graduate from high school. And 50 kids in the school went from in the 2s point graduation, I mean, I'm sorry, not graduation,
GPA,
but
grade point.
GPA up to the 3.0 GPA. So they were able to improve their GPA in order to, again, help them to consider college and to consider their studies. So the school was very, very pleased with the program. They've asked us to come back, and they, they recognized that these students were not only in an impoverished area, but because of COVID, they, they depleted a lot of their, I mean, they had a loss of in the area of academics, loss in the area of social and emotional skills, and also it's one of the schools that has a very high number of students to a low number of teachers. So they were suffering from lack of sufficient teachers, so that we were able to provide individual tutoring, as well as larger groups of tutoring. But most of these kids benefited from individual tutoring, and most of their parents never went to college. So they didn't have the opportunity to have assistance, academic assistance in any way. And, we were told that there would have been no way that these students would have had that kind of assistance, help, support, or whatever you want to call it, without this particular program. So they were really very, very pleased with the result, and again asked us to come back. And so we're going back next year.
Oh, it's just amazing, Gerald. And I think of so many other people who might be concerned about the things that are going on in the schools and their communities. And like you said, they're running up against these barriers where the school necessarily isn't going to allow a religious group to come in and start teaching those kinds of values based off of religion and things like that. But what would your suggestion be to people or parents who are looking at a school system that is maybe not fulfilling what they need to? The children are not getting the education that the parents are hoping for. What would you suggest to help them kind of break through?
Well, this is exactly what happened in New Jersey. We have some, and this is where I'm getting, I'm so glad that you asked that question. Wasn't as prepared to address it, but I'm really excited about where we're going. What happened in New Jersey this past year is that there have been some new standards. They're called comprehensive 2020 standards for comprehensive health and physical education. But these standards are promoting issues such as gender identity, and some topics that parents are extremely upset about. They're teaching in fifth grade, not only gender studies, but they're also things, and I mean, I hate to even use the word, but masturbation. And then in eighth grade, kids need to be able to differentiate between different types of sexual perversion. I won't mention some of what they are, but parents are in a rage about what's going on in New Jersey. So what we have done, and what we encourage, what we've done, and we're meeting with our legislators, and we're setting up meetings with Board of Education. We're offering a what is called optimal standards in sexual education. I was involved as I was trying to get myself educated and provide some of these programs. The program that Barringer ended up being our pilot. I was on a coalition, and that coalition consisted of some of the top professionals in the area of sexual education of children. And they came up with, over the past several years, what they consider optimal standards that promote the emotional, physical, the entire well-being of children and students. And this is what we have been able to offer. In fact, some of our legislators have called me because I sent them a letter and mentioned that there are alternatives. They didn't realize that there's alternatives to what New Jersey is proposing. What New Jersey is proposing is really harmful for kids, and there are optimal standards, and our public school children, with the amount that we pay, taxpayers pay in the state, they should be getting the best in education, and not substandard, standards for sex education. So that's what we've promoted, and our legislators are now looking at, and we have even sent it to some school boards are rejecting these new standards that the Board of Education, the state of New Jersey Board of Education, has actually being forced on them. And some schools are rejecting them. And we have offered some of these areas, some of these locations, optimal standards. So, to answer your question, what we're doing in New Jersey and what I suggest for other parents that are really concerned about what's being taught in the schools is to that there are alternatives. There are optimal standards. The ones that we have promoted are from the Medical Institute. That's the medinstitute.org. They have devised those standards, and there's a number of wonderful organizations, and one of them are the curriculum that offer curriculum that are consistent with these optimal standards. And we've used that curriculum. The one that we've used for our pilot program was called Relationships Under Construction, and that group is out of Ohio. But there's others as well. So we encourage parents to find out what is being taught in the schools because, unfortunately, the quote unquote comprehensive sex education programs are really promoting contraception to kids in schools, and they're normalizing sexual activity and promoting contraception as a way to avoid pregnancies and STDs, etc. But that's not medically accurate because the 100% foolproof way of avoiding those problems is refraining or avoiding sexual activity. So that's why, we're very active. We're getting really active in promoting optimal standards. And we're even considering, for some locations in New Jersey, just starting a small micro school where, because a lot of parents that can afford it are pulling their kids out of the public schools and they're going to private schools. But private schools is an expensive alternative. And some parents are pulling them out in homeschooling. So we're finding those are two options in New Jersey. But we'd like to offer and begin on, just like we began last year on a small pilot program, we'd like to begin a pilot program that would offer affordable classic education for parents that may not be able to stay home and homeschool, but something that would be a hybrid between homeschool slash a private school. And in a very small type environment. And I've heard them called micro schools, I've heard them called co-ops. There's a couple different names for it, but that's what we're exploring this year. We are collaborating and partnering with a number of organizations in New Jersey, and they're also national, that's our new project to start on a very small scale, this kind of a school where it can be faith-based and we can teach a classic education to students.
Right. And you've got to start someplace. That's what I love is that you've just started. You've seen something that was concerning and you want to protect these children because, of course, that's the mission of the Dolores Turco Foundation is to protect these children and taking those small steps and working your way. And it does make a difference. I have an interesting question for you, Gerald, because this, we're dealing with topics that are really difficult. You're dealing with topics that are really difficult, and different people come out and say it's not politically correct, and they want different things taught based on different reasons for political correctness. And what do you do in a situation when you're up against someone who is not on the same side as you? They think that the education that the New Jersey schools are putting forth, this new program, would be better. How do you manage that? Like, how do we have those conversations when, how do we navigate the tricky waters that this brings up?
Well, okay, there's a couple of responses to that because, and this is what I learned from going back to college at 60, and I'm a conservative, and I was surrounded by these wonderful liberals that I just adored these kids, and I just loved my professors. And I had to actually write papers where I'm promoting the exact opposite of what their beliefs are in school. And I think what it starts with is beginning with finding some common ground.
Yeah.
Finding common ground, realizing that we are out, what our primary interest is educating students, what's in their best interest, what is the optimal, what is the highest and best quality that we can offer these students. And I would start there by finding common ground. The reason we were able to get into Barringer and they, you know, accepted our message is because we wanted to help these kids graduate and get them out of poverty, you know, the cycle of poverty. Most of their parents never went to college. And again, most of these kids live in poverty conditions. So we're looking at an overall goal, like an overarching goal mm-hmm. of preventing poverty, providing the highest and best quality education possible to students, helping students, again, to flourish, because getting the best education will help them to have a more flourishing future and to prevent dropping out of school. And unfortunately, the children of single parents are more likely to have health problems. They're more likely to have issues of incarceration, more likely to drop out of school, more likely to get pregnant, more likely to be involved in risky behaviors. So that I like to look at this as, instead of, you know, what we're against, what are we for?
Right.
And we are for what's best for these kids, what will provide them with a flourishing future, what will help them to, you know, fulfill their purpose. And because a lot of kids are suffering from depression, anxiety, you know, this generation has been through probably more than any other generation of certainly our lifetimes. When you think about it, COVID and riots and natural disasters and, you know, these poor kids, just to survive, we have to help them flourish. We really have to help them flourish. And we need to do that by providing support. And if they need tutoring or support or mentoring is another aspect of our program. We need to give them to meet their needs.
Yeah.
And
it's such a great place.
That's where I would begin.
Yeah, it's such a great place to start. And it makes so much sense because, like you said, that common ground is we come together as people. Any parent who has a child, any adult really for that matter, you know, my hope is that they would want to protect and help and see these children be successful. So if we can find that common ground and do those things and provide those things to help within that common ground, then we can start to move and really affect change in these kids' lives.
And I also think it begins with communication. You see, my value system is I believe every human being is created in the image of God and likeness of God and deserving of respect, love, respect, dignity. And even those people that don't agree, that are on the polar opposite of everything I believe, you know, these are God's children just like I am. And, you know, they also are deserving of love and respect and to be heard. So again, having been in college and realizing people have different perspectives, I will start with, you know, bringing out what some of their beliefs are. And say that, you know, and kind of not so much agreeing, but, you know, saying that, okay, this is where we're at. And then say, on the other hand, there are these, and also research-based, not just my opinion, not just how I feel about something, mm-hmm. but researched background as to why certain things harm children. Like, for example, some transgender issues that are going on in school, talking about puberty blockers. These things can be very harmful. They're experimental. So if we stick with, you know, research-based actual, you know, harms that things that can cause harm to children, then you have a little bit of a different perspective,
right.
as opposed to a feeling based, you know,
right.
And also we have to be very careful about discrimination. Our programs don't discriminate against, you know, kids that, or people that might have homosexual or other backgrounds. Our message is very clear, very non-discriminatory. It's avoidance of sexual activity for all students, no matter
Right.
what your perspective is, because it's the most healthy and it'll prevent diseases. And when you look at the research, you will find that some of the diseases and some of the regarding same-sex activities and behaviors are even they're riskier, and these kids have higher chances of STDs and behaviors that are harmful for them. So again, we're not differentiating. The message is the same for all young
Is
people.
to
You know, as
protect
adults, if you
children.
want to make
Yeah.
that,
You're protecting children at the end of the day. It
yes.
doesn't matter what they are, what background they come from, you want the best for them.
Right. Adults, it's different making choices. Those, adults can make their choices as adults, but children, their maturity level, I mean, they can't vote, they can't drink, they can't drive for certain reasons. They don't have the maturity level to be making certain decisions. And therefore, the message is to, refrain from some of these activities until you are adults. And so.
Oh, Gerald, I love this conversation and I love your passion. And I just have to say, I think your mom must be so proud of the work that you're doing, that you were able to take her passion and what it's become is just an inspiration to other parents like we are and people who want to be out there doing the best for their community. I'm just so inspired by you.
Well, I'm very inspired by your work and what your organization, United We Pledge, is doing, and I'm just honored to be invited to or even be considered that we're offering something of value. So,
Well,
and
it's stories like this that help us to be inspired to move within our own communities, to find those common values and find those common causes that we can move the needle forward to make sure that we're doing the best for especially the children in our communities. I love that message that let's move forward in that united way to protect these children, and you really are doing such amazing work. What is, if someone wants to find more about your foundation, what's your website?
Our website is simply DoloresTurcoFoundation.org, and we are on the web, so you're welcome to check us out. And one thing that I can say is that we haven't been afraid to start small. We're one of those organizations that it does. Things don't have to be really big to start or to do something. We believed, that almost a little bit like Mother Teresa. It's not that we're anything like Mother Teresa, but it's you start with one, and then you take it, see where God leads. Most of the things we've started have been starting small, and we kind of just trust that if it's something good, that God will lead to something greater.
Oh, I think that is an absolute perfect way to wrap this up. Start small, be inspired to take one step in the direction. I just love that. Gerald, this has been an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for sharing with us, and we can't wait to see what the Dolores Turco Foundation is able to accomplish in the next few years.
Oh, thank you, Colleen. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And anything good, I give credit and glory to God. So I thank God too for allowing us to be able to serve.